Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to be talking about the one topic which we have not referenced very much this past few years, is men. Wow. We get on that thing and we say, oh, are we going to talk about how good they are, how great they are, how much a pain in the butt they are? Are we going to talk about how they save the world, how they're destroying the world, how they just don't even know what's up or down? Really, what we're talking about today is The New Senior Man. It's a book by Dr. Thelma Reese, and it's exploring new horizons and new opportunities. I think it's really interesting to read this book, because what it shares is that men are awake. Men are paying attention. They are evolving just as much as women are. They are evolving just as much as the millennials are. And they're also having some of the similar struggles. It's just we don't hear about it on social media. We don't see it on television because they have this man kind of thing that they have to uphold, that they're stronger than God and they're never going to bend, they're never going to break, and they're going to go like that, you know, to their deathbed and so on, and they're going to come back that way too, and they remind you of that. And we think about it so many times. We say, can we always be the strongest? Can we live in a silo? Can we find our identity just in our work and what we are doing? And what happens when all of that gets thrown up in the air like litter? Today we're going to explore all of these concepts. Dr. Thelma, thank you so much for joining us today. It's such a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be with you.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to have someone here, especially a woman that's coming on talking about men. You know, we don't want to have men coming on talking about men.
Absolutely. Well, we were told they'd never talk, but they did, and the book is here.
Yes, and they did, and I think what they're starting to do is they're starting to crack open, per se. I think, I read your book again. The book is The New Senior Man, and right in the front page, I just sat down for 1 second, put my hand on the book, and I said, men create legacies, women create lives. Whoa. Isn't that a statement, don't you think?
It is. I think it's changing tremendously, though, before our very eyes. And I think what you said before, too, really struck me, because it's so true that men have been conditioned to think that they should be so strong and they should be so silent about themselves. Mm-hmm. And, of course, right at this moment, they're kind of getting a bad press because of the really bad actors among them. But those are not the norm, I'm convinced.
Right. Well, you know, I think a lot of times when I see men stirring things up or creating chaos, I say, oh, that's fabulous, because something inside of them is stirring. They're creating chaos, so we can look at it and say, that's not how I wish it to be. And then you turn around and you create something better. I think sometimes when we see things that are always the norm or how we believe they should be, riding along that same old pony gets really tiring. You know, I think it's time that we can see, you know, to do things differently, or, you know, and how things might be able to be created for something else, you know?
Well, you know, men who are reaching their 60s now and older were, for the most part, in our society, pretty much conditioned to be stoic about what was bothering them. They were told to man up. We wanted to call this book Manning Up to Retirement. And every time we mention that to a group the men got it right away and thought that was a great title. But unfortunately, or fortunately, we had written a book called The New Senior Woman. And so because that was successful, the publisher said, this one's going to be The New Senior Man. And everywhere we talked about The New Senior Woman, someone in the audience, usually a man, brought there by a woman, would say, right. When are you going to write the book about men? And then somebody else would say, they'll never talk. But
right.
They did.
Right.
And they were raised to man up since they were children. Even the little boy was told mm-hmm. to man up. If a ball was coming at him, likely to hit him, don't cry. That's mm-hmm. a kind of a girlish thing to do.
Right.
Big boys, men don't cry. They hold it all in. That's a weak thing to show. And so not showing vulnerability became such a habit that for many men, when they reach a time when maybe it would be a good idea to kind of rely on other people, open up to other people, it's a little hard to do.
Right. Well, you know, I think so much we've learned in the past also is that our identity is our gender, you know. So pretty much, you know, if you're a man and that's your gender, this is almost like the book that you bought, you know.
Yeah.
You have to follow the pages and you have to stay within those.
Right, this is a role to play. Yeah.
Right, you have to stay within those blinders, you know, don't dare step outside of it, right?
Right, and that's very true, especially, too, for men who were raised to be protectors, providers, and we're
mm-hmm.
fortunate for those of us who have had wonderful fathers, husbands, partners, brothers. That was a great role for them to play. There's no question about it. But on the other hand, when the time comes that maybe the role they were playing changes, for instance, retirement, what happens
right.
the next day? What happens
yeah.
when you don't have that role to play exactly?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who you are? So
right.
this is a really a crucial time of life.
You know, I also think about it, too. We would not have this conversation probably even 10 years ago. And I really thought about it. I said, is it really people who are changing? Or perhaps our perception of the world around us. You know, a long time ago, I mean, I grew up in the 50s and 60s. Most of the men, you know, my grandfather died in his early 60s. My other grandfather, I never saw him, so apparently he must have died in his 30s or 40s. When we think about it, people were dying much earlier. And
absolutely.
They, you know, and they really didn't have a chance to evolve. And when
exactly.
we think about, you know, we think about it, we say, well, I don't ever remember my grandparents doing that. Well, of course you didn't because they died earlier, you know.
They died earlier or they sort of disappeared from the social scene. We didn't see them on television anymore. We didn't
right.
see ads featuring these incredibly airbrushed, wonderful-looking seniors.
Yeah.
Who haven't a line in their faces, but they do have gray hair, and they look very fit. But
right.
at least they're there. We didn't used yeah. to see them. You're absolutely right. The population has changed so much that where the number of seniors used to be exemplified by a point at the top of a pyramid showing the population of the United States. There's no point at the top of the pyramid anymore. There is a straight plateau. It's evened out because there are so many people living well past 60. You know, Social Security was created in the 30s, and
right.
making 65 the limit was a real safe thing to do because the average age to live was only 65.
Right,
that's
right.
changed, and now you can a man can be retiring at 60 and have a third of his life left.
Yeah, and you know
a third
I think
of
some
active life.
Right, and so many of them say when they don't even want to get to that age, some are saying, can I check out earlier, you know, because they kind of have it in their heads that they don't know who they are or what they are. And I think even when we talk about legacy, a legacy is their identity of what they do. They really didn't come into contact or connect with their purpose, which is their heart. They're missing that heart of, or the spirit of who they are. In other words, you know, they all grew up, men who were in this age group right now, grew up 40s, 50s, 60s, and it was all about the house, the fence, the kids, and you did this, 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 and this. And they're sort of like, well, now you're telling me I have to be something else? I don't know how to be something else. I was that. I was did everything they told me. Now what the heck do I have to be? Right?
Right. That's absolutely true. I think we're not seeing this so much among younger people, among millennials.
Right.
Who are looking at who are sharing child raising in a way that older men never did. And many of the men in the book have talked about that, that they see their sons raising their children very differently and wish that they had had that time. And many of them are wonderful grandparents because there is a joke, of course, that grandparents and grandchildren get along so well because they have a common enemy, but we're not going to go there.
Right. Well, you know, even with my daughter, you know, her husband is now working from home and so is she, and I'm going, wow, you know, I remember houses, you could go up and down a neighborhood, you know, in the middle of the day and there was nobody there. And now I even mentioned this to my husband the other day. I said, where are all these kids? What are they doing in the grocery store in the middle of the day? Don't they belong in school? You know? So it's sort of like, where are all these people milling around all the time in the day, right?
We live next door to a preschool. And over the past 30 years that we've lived in this house, we've seen such changes in who brings the little kids to school, who picks them up, and it's just as much daddies as mommies now, and it's just as much daddies shopping at the supermarket with their kids as the mothers. There's a shared kind of experience that their fathers didn't either have the time for or the role they felt absolutely comfortable in playing as men.
Right.
Today we discuss many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family. Clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.
You know, I think about it back into the 50s and 60s when we think about the hippie time, you know, of the 70s and 80s also. Men were already at work. They were already set into their pattern. And when we say, you know, to connect with who you are or think about do you love, have self-love or whatever that might be, men would say, I was busy out bringing home a paycheck so you had a roof over your head. I didn't have time to do that or explore it in the 70s and 80s when everyone else did. So now they're kind of getting confronted with that, don't you think?
Absolutely, and it can be a time of real crisis, and it can also be a time of tremendous opportunity. I think we really need to look at this period of a person's life as another time of growth, another developmental stage. You know, we have the stages of childhood and adolescence and adulthood. And instead of looking at this as something that is a downturn when you reach it, we have to look at it as a time of new growth and opportunity.
Right.
When you don't have some of those same responsibilities that you had, mm-hmm. what else is there for you? And the world is so open to your changing and what you have to contribute.
You know, it's interesting. You have a section in your book that you use the word transition. And almost transition is from a job to no job. And I like to use the word transform, because transition would be your identity as your job. But when I say transform, you're now going to become
right.
more or evolving kind of person.
Yes? Absolutely. So there is a transition. And if you use that
right.
to transform, you're
right.
absolutely right. That's getting at the gift of time that
mm-hmm.
we have. Even with the difficulties, the challenges that aging brings, and believe me, they're real.
Yeah.
There's loss. There are the physical
yeah.
challenges and changes that are hard to deal with. But they're not crippling. They're not things that can stop people who are determined not to be stopped and are determined to keep growing. Things that used to be illnesses, for example, that used to be death sentences, are now chronic.
Mm-hmm.
Things that people live with for many years.
Right, right.
So with all of that changing, it's amazing. I love the 90-something-year-old man called Dada in the book who talks about the difference between pain and suffering. He's
mm-hmm.
learned to live with pain, but
right.
that's not suffering necessarily.
Yeah. Yeah, I have this little list of words I want to kick to the curb. Suffering and then fine. You know when people say, how are you, and you say fine, I'll say, okay, that means you don't want to talk, so then I'll just let you be, you
yeah.
know?
Right.
Yeah, and suffering, when people would say that to me often, because like I have massive migraines my entire life, and I spent like 2 years where I mean simply could not move for like 2 years. I had them so bad, and I remember people say, "Oh, I'm so sorry for your suffering today." And I said, "What does that mean?" And it was sort of like a word; it wasn't even in my vocabulary, so I didn't know what the context even
yeah.
meant, because
yeah.
I never suffered that, you know. And I think a lot
you
of times
dwelling
too,
on the fact that you had this problem,
right, right,
yeah.
And
yeah.
I think sometimes when men go into transformation, they can kind of let some of that dogma go away, but then they end
exactly.
up with a different vocabulary about how their day is going to be. You know, it was interesting.
But, you know, they do have, of course, nothing is true of everybody, but
right.
we can generalize enough to know that men lack something that women have at that phase of life. Most women enter years that we think of as retirement stage of life or age of life with a cadre of intimate friends that they've had all their lives, or they've been able to form these intimate friendships with people since they were children.
Right.
Women have done that almost intuitively, perhaps intuitively,
mm-hmm.
and they can meet strangers and become friends and share intimate knowledge of each other.
Right.
Men don't enter these years usually with those
mm-hmm.
kinds of relationships. So most of their social relationships often have really been around work or their wives' families or their partners' friends.
Right.
Their friendships with other men have been either around work or a sport
yeah.
or some particular topic like that, but not about what it means to be going through the time that they are. One of the first men in the book is divorced from Wanda, who happens to be in the book about women. And when I met Bob, who's now in his 80s, very social man, golfer, lovely person. They have a friendly divorce. There were never any children. And when I said to him, well, when you have a problem, when something's really bothering you, do you discuss it with your friends? And he says, oh, no, I call Wanda.
Right.
He wouldn't talk about things that are worrying him with his friends that he plays golf with, has a beer with, sits around and talks about politics with. He would only call Wanda. And that's very typical.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I have some ex-husbands who do the same thing, you know. You know, we laugh about it because I think that, you know, I think something really struck me when you said it, something just a minute ago. And I, and men kind of get this, oh, crap, who the heck am I when they retire?
Yeah.
But I think women get it when they have menopause because it's all of a sudden. So maybe they're getting it like a decade earlier and they're saying, holy crap, who am I? They're kind of prepared for it. And, you know,
it's a real
change,
yes.
Right. And we see people saying, you know, oh, I'm just about over this. You know, it's almost like a death of what you upheld.
Well, but is it a death? Is it the kind that that something has that emerges as the butterfly, you know?
Correct. Yeah.
Are you getting rid of something only to emerge as something stronger?
Something you didn't need anyway, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, it was interesting you wrote in the, there was a story in the book too about a dentist. And I think about, I had an elder person that I was in a relationship with, and he was 20 years older than I was. And he was a dentist, and I was a dental hygienist. And it was a lovely relationship. I mean, actually... I'll just rephrase it pretty quickly here, but I remember his office was right down from our high school, and when I was 17, I was part of the medical services club, and I had gone down. We go down and we visit dental office, so we went to visit, and I saw him, and you know, and he was just doing his business or whatever, and we kind of left, and then it was like. I think it was about 10 years after that I needed a job, and I had applied at the office, and they said no. And then 10 years later, I applied again, and they said no. And then I kind of got in there, you know. And I got in there, and then we had started our relationship. And then 10 years later, I came back again to check on him after I'd gotten another degree of mine, and he was not well, and he did pass away within that certain time. But when I think about it, the professions really have been changing so quickly, and we just, if we could think about just how much we, you know, dentists could not keep up. I'm telling you, dentists are the really toughest profession in the world right now.
Yeah.
They cannot keep up. There's going to be stem cells within the next 10 years, and there won't be a dentist. So go for that. But when we think about men that have...
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm so old now. I would love to be around for that.
Yeah. Maybe it'll be two. Don't worry. But, you know, but we think about it. We say, you know, men are in these professions, and they're trying to keep up.
Yes.
You know, and trying to keep up.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult to, quote, keep up because the internet came out. All of a sudden, there were so many studies. You see this with physicians.
Yeah.
A lot of physicians committing suicide these days. It's really high, the number.
Yeah.
And we say, why are physicians leaving practice? And it's because patients come in and they're like, did you read this on the internet? I want it. Why don't you know about it, you know?
Oh, yes, and I saw these ads for this new drug, and why aren't you giving it to me?
Right.
I don't think they should be advertising to the consumer, but that troubles me greatly. I think you're absolutely right. This is a time of tremendous adjustment when things are moving at such a rapid pace for everyone. Mm-hmm. But even more, I believe, for men. I spoke recently in Rochester, New York, and they had a luncheon for me first with some people who lived at this senior living place, a wonderful place called St. John's. And one of the men at the table said to me, do you think it's more difficult to be a man than a woman? And I had to say, I do. I did
right.
before, and I still do. With all of the strides that we have had to make as women, and still do, I think the expectations, if you are raising a son, the expectations for a boy in this world have
right.
always been really awful in terms of how difficult it could be. I think mm-hmm. that's changing because girls are going to have the same kinds. I mean, it's about time
mm-hmm.
that was shared, but girls are now coming under the same kind of pressures to perform, to achieve.
Right.
And with so many options, most of which are precarious and changing
mm-hmm.
constantly, as you say, very difficult.
Right.
We spend part of the year in Palo Alto, California, and that's another world where you see the change right in front of you, where you're walking around and dodging the driverless cars already.
Right.
It's another world.
You know, I have three boys, and they're in their 30s, almost 40. And I can tell you, each one of them is so vitally different, and they are nothing like their fathers. They are nothing like their grandfathers. They're so totally different in what they're doing and where they are in life. And I think the word when you say in your book about retire, some say never and they mean it. I think maybe perhaps the word retire means I'm just not going to go to that job every day, but I might do the same job in a different way.
Absolutely.
Or I might do something different with it.
People are groping for a new term.
Right.
We had one woman in the women's book who said, I'm not retired, I'm refired. Well, that's
right.
That's cute, and it says something, but I just came across a new term. People are looking for a new term that has to do with aging, and
mm-hmm.
the new one that's just come out in some publications since January, I love, and we'll break it, Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, on your show. Here it comes. Are you ready?
Ready.
It's perennial. It's not to be a senior. It's to become a perennial.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's such a good term. I think the people in the Longevity Institute at Stanford are the ones who came up with it. And I think it's going to catch on because it says something about renewal. When you think about a perennial plant,
mm-hmm.
what's happening? It keeps coming back.
Right.
We did not include in this book or the book about women the event of dementia and Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's real for people, but this book is really about people who fortunately are still functioning well mentally. Now,
right.
I don't mean without, believe me, losses of memory that seem scary at first but are perfectly normal that happen as we age. But the idea of being a perennial instead of being mm-hmm. a senior is very appealing to me.
Well, you know, I talk a lot on this show about great expanded awareness, consciousness, and awakening and spirituality. And I've always said on here is that our spirit or soul is a continuum, that our lifetime is only a wardrobe change. So if we can look at our life right now, it's just a wardrobe change. It's really about our experiences in the moment as living in the present moment. It's almost like more of this this Tao kind of concept, you know, about being able to just live in the moment and just say, great for my experience, and tomorrow's not promised.
If you're doing that, if you're living in the moment, and you can appreciate the fact that you're bringing something to this moment
mm-hmm.
that you never could have brought years ago.
Right.
So that awakens something. And your sons, who mm-hmm. are in their 30s and 40s, my daughters, who are older, and they're up in their 50s, one is 60 now, when they are developing the way you're talking about, and developing spiritually and developing many interests
right.
and awareness of the world and their place in it and how they even maybe can make it better,
mm-hmm.
they will grow into being perennials.
Right.
And they will not suffer, I think, the same kinds of abrupt challenges that
mm-hmm.
people have had with forced retirements, for example.
Mhm. Heck, some of them aren't even working and they're in their 30s.
Oh, yes. Well, there is one terrific guy in there from San Francisco who is now, I guess he's just turning 70, and he did take an early retirement, but he said he really kind of lived things backwards. He acted mm-hmm. like a retired person all through his 20s.
Yeah,
and then
right.
he started serious work. For
right.
a long time, and formally retired, and ever since then, he's been on call to do so much for the city and for his former employers, but on a different basis. And I found that fascinating because he said he realized that he had done things that he would think about doing as a retiree when he was young.
Right. You know, it's interesting that you said that about a perennial because on your chapter, New Paths, I had written on the top of the page, lighting up other petals of the daisy. I've spoken
uh-huh.
about this. I've spoken about this many times on this radio show before, is that each time we have an experience, we kind of dance with it for a while. We explore it. You know, we go down the highway. We take some exits. We see what it's about. And we say, okay, now I'm done with that. And we go to the next petal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like you think of yourself almost at end of life. People always want to say that they feel like they're, you know, dying and that it's the ends. I kind of say, whoa, it's kind of like a blossom. All of your petals are lit up on your daisy.
Exactly.
Isn't that great? You know?
Exactly. And we also talk about meandering. Some men, when they face retirement from what they've been doing, and many people literally do, surgeons have to stop operating. You know, people
mm-hmm.
reach a retirement age at the institution where they work, or they're forced to. And they panic when they don't
right.
have something right away to turn to. And taking that time to meander and explore
mm-hmm.
different paths is a great thing to do. You don't
meandering's lighting up the petals, right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. It really is, yeah. Following different paths. And I like to think about how much easier that is today than it ever was before.
Right.
Most people remember, if they were fortunate enough as children, to have an encyclopedia in the house.
Yeah, I
they
remember that.
They remember the day it was delivered
yep.
because it was so exciting.
Yep.
And
mm-hmm.
how much room it took up.
Yeah, yeah.
What does that take up now? You have so much more than that those books could ever hold.
Right
in the palm of your hand on your iPhone.
Right.
You have it all in your computer and more, so that you can sit there and explore the whole world and everything that ever interested you. Isn't that amazing?
You know, it is, and I think the word meandering, sometimes people take it as a negative connotation. They say,
mm-hmm.
you have no focus, you have no
mm-hmm.
goal. Where are you not going? What is your end result? And, you know, put up your vision board. Oh, that vision board, that's another one of those kick to the curb
yeah.
kind of words.
Yeah.
I don't go with that. But, you know, when I think of meandering, I kind of think of it as exploring. And meandering
exactly.
to me is,
too.
Yeah, yeah, it's like exploring in your mind. Heck, go outside, you know, and, you know,
yeah.
it's the funniest thing. I live in New Orleans, and there was this big dissertation kind of idea on the news about how this city is a bowl and it's surrounded by these big humps of dirt called levees, and how we have to make sure that they're great to keep the city fine. And I'm thinking, you know, you're spending billions and billions of dollars to study these stupid humps of dirt for the past eons. And you know what? Give that question to a little kid that's 5 years old and say, tell me how to not get water in the middle of this circle, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And we think, what's the deal here, people? Do you know what I mean? It's sort of like, are we making life so dang complicated?
Yes. I think you're right. And I agree with you that this is that creativity gets stifled, especially with children. Well, I think it's a hard time, hardest time in our world, in our particular world here in this country. It's the hardest time there ever was to be a child, even though we have child labor laws. We're not protecting them very well, are we?
Right. I'll
I'm
tell
not
you
sure what I would be doing if I were raising children again today.
Yeah, I know. My children have children, and they're like, oh gosh. I texted my daughter the other day, and I said that they just put an armed guard at your grade school that you used to go to.
Oh.
And she said, wow. She said, I don't know what I'm going to do when my child grows up to that age, you know. So,
oh, my.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the, that children should have to go thinking what could happen to them. Having seen it now so many times, it's unthinkable.
Let's talk about your chapter. We talk about my life at home feels different, you know. I think a lot of times we say that, you know, if you get up and you leave the house every single day, I mean, I know this for myself, you know, with all my degrees and my jobs and working and single parenting and kids and blah, blah, I really wasn't at home very much either. Mm-hmm. So if we think about it, when we're finally, quote, home, we're going to look at everything differently. We're going to finally see that, you know, hey, I really need a new couch and I'm so sick of that. Or, gosh, I never did dust that corner. Maybe I should just paint the room, you know, right?
And not just that, but, of course, if there are two people still in the household, the old joke, I married him for better or worse, but not for lunch.
Right,
is
right.
One that really comes into play because one of those people has one whole agenda, and here comes somebody who's been away all day doing something else and is suddenly home. And they don't always mesh so well.
If you think about it, would your wife come to your job every single day, and how would that be? You know?
Exactly.
So
exactly. And
I don't know why we've missed that concept.
Somehow. There are a lot of things we kind of miss until they hit us. Until they hit us, and it turns out we both actually are still pretty okay, and we have the energy to do some things, and here we are together again.
I mean,
I've been fortunate to be married for over 60 years. But, it works out well because I work on the second floor and he works on the third.
Yeah.
Too much togetherness can be stifling for some.
Well, if you think about it, your friends have evolved over years too, and so have your likes and your dislikes. You know, I mean,
exactly.
I think the idea of marriage and religion, not to bash it at all, but the idea that you have to, you must do this, you must stay together, irregardless.
Exactly.
You know,
well,
it's something.
Well, there is a cynic in the chapter about this who says that monogamy was created when people only lived to be 39 years old.
Correct. Yep. And that's the truth. I mean, you know, you don't
really. People do change, and especially when they have had separate work lives where they've developed different interests, as you say, you've evolved in different ways, not always exactly together. And some of the people who did it the most together turn out to be as a young psychiatrist friend says to me, of her family, they put the fun in dysfunctional. They really
right.
shouldn't have been so together. And
right.
So these adjustments are part of living, but not everyone makes them successfully. It takes a lot of thinking.
And sometimes I think people go through things and they say, I needed to do that because that was what expected of me, or that was what my marriage said, or
right.
that was what my mortgage
yeah.
says. I didn't have anywhere else to go. And I think that is such playing a victim code that if
yes.
we look at it, we say, gosh, people, really?
Right.
You know,
right.
is that true?
Just because I have to conform to what is expected by my parents,
mm-hmm.
by my community.
Right.
We've come a long way about some things in these social
mm-hmm.
changes, but there's a lot left to be done so that
Absolutely.
People are aware that they do have their own agency. They can work in ways that are really good for them and therefore better for the people who depend on them.
You know, you talk, too, about alone and lonely. You know, I speak about this a lot on this show. You know, almost like retirement is now, you're saying you have to face yourself, you know, because you aren't running anymore. You aren't running out the door. It's almost like when you retire, people turn around and say, get a life. And it's like, what do you mean, get a life? I had a life. And then we said,
yeah.
no, that was your identity. Now we want
right.
to see what you are. Who is you? What are you?
Right.
What is your life?
And there is a difference between solitude and loneliness.
Right.
But loneliness is something that men who retire, especially if they're alone, really have to face and deal with assertively, because loneliness can really be a killer, literally, for
right.
some men. So the idea that if they never had them before, they have to form relationships with other people. And there are so many ways of doing it that make them feel good, by being volunteers, by getting into an organization where something they're doing is helping somebody else or another group of people.
Right.
And comes to have meaning for them. They will always meet like-minded people that way. So
yeah.
being alone doesn't mean you have to be lonely, you have to suffer from it, and allowing yourself to do that is a terrible mistake, and it is one that can be avoided.
But also, too, I think that people found their validity, or they found their found everything about themselves from outside world, how their performance was
mm-hmm.
in their job, or how people
yes.
looked at them,
yes.
or honored them, you know. But now,
yeah.
now we have to really find our validity in ourselves. It's not
yes.
about attaching to that.
And that's true. But since so many people need to do that,
mm-hmm.
What we're finding that is new among men, in fact, I'm meeting with someone in New York tomorrow who got in touch with me because she's been using the book. She's a social worker at
mm-hmm.
a senior center, and she's been using the new book about men with a men's group, and
yeah.
there is a discussion guide in the back, and they are reading it and they're using the discussion guide to spur their own discussions every week
right.
and sharing with each other their ideas that they've gotten from the book and from the lives that they're reading about. So this is new with men. There are not many, but they are definitely growing in number, often through churches, of men's discussion groups. Women have always had them, informally or even formally.
Right.
Men have had them maybe about the stock market.
Yeah.
Or about... I love one man said, you know, he didn't want to be part of a Romeo group. I said, what's a Romeo group? He said, retired old men eating out. You see them at lunch.
That's true.
And they were just going out to eat together. Well, it was good to have the company. But to have something to really talk about with each other that becomes a support group is wonderful for men in retirement. And wonderful for the people who are trying to find new meaning and stretch themselves and develop projects to work on that they hadn't thought about before.
I think also, too, when it's retirement kind of entails the idea that they're facing death, that they have a fear of death. And now we're really, I think, looking more at the spiritual part and saying there's more of a continuum of life. So some men take on a very spiritual path after retirement.
Yes.
And some men are just not able to be there yet, but they are starting to crack open to that, don't you think?
I think that's absolutely true. There's a wonderful pastor in the book who, he was just marvelous, and Keith Walker, and I met him because someone was here to install a new phone on my husband's desk, and he was a technician, and he saw the book about women on my husband's desk. He said, "Oh, did you write this?" I said, "Yes." And I said, "I'm working on one about men." And he said, "Oh, you should talk to my pastor."
Okay.
This happened all the time. This is how it sounds. So many wonderful men. And he was fascinating because he has worked with men's groups, really pioneering among them for years, and has a lot to say about it. And about his own family and raising his own sons. And the idea that it's okay to talk over important aspects of life with other men and share problems and get ideas and feel supported is wonderful. And it's about time it started evolving into more of a movement, and it's happening.
Right. I think in closing, Dr. Thelma, you know, your chapter at the end says, "Who will you be?" And I've always thought about it that it says, what is your label outside, but we're really looking for the self inside. So if we can say, who are you in your heart, and just sit down and say, you know what, all of that can just go away. We see this so much when people are put into nursing homes or assisted living, they have to leave all of their identity that they believed was their house, their home, their stuff, you know, and they have to leave it all. And they felt that now they are nothing. And we see many, 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 many people.
Absolutely.
They're not in assisted living for a month and they pass away because they just gave
That's
up.
Right.
You know,
right. Purpose.
So it's about finding
their identity,
self.
Their feeling of identity and meaning.
Yeah,
has left. It's that's the worst thing, right?
Right. And I think
doesn't have to be.
I think as women, if we really try to support that. That it doesn't have to be that you're not the job, you're not the money, the paycheck, or how many letters after your name. Women know this. I mean, how many letters do I have after my name? And you also, you know, that's not us. We are something other than that. And to be able to be, I think, strong about that, yes?
I feel very strongly, and I feel very strongly about the opportunity at and maybe even I'm beginning to feel the responsibility that people have as they become perennials to make a contribution to the world.
Yeah.
When people say they have nothing to do, I say, well, just take a look around. Is anything bothering you? You think anything's wrong? Let me count the ways. Most people, you know, could go on for days once you ask that question. Well, if there's some little piece of that you could fix, just help fix, just offer something that helps fix it, you're going to find out that while you're doing that, you're really fixing a part of yourself.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Thelma, it has been such a pleasure to talk to you today. It was such a wonderful time.
Thank you so much. I've enjoyed every minute.
Can you share with the listeners how to find out more information about you? That would be wonderful in your new book.
Well, they can look at www.elderchicks, all one word, ELDERCHICKS.com, which is a blog that we've had for, pardon me, a number of years already. And there's information about the book there, too. They can go to Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com or a Barnes & Noble store and ask to find The New Senior Man. They can just put my name in, Thelma Reese, R-E-E-S-E. And wherever you find me, feel free to email Dr. Thelma, D-R-T-H-E-L-M-A, at AOL.com. I always answer, and I love to hear from people. So I thank you so much, and I've enjoyed this enormously.
Well, it was such wonderful having you, Dr. Thelma. We'll have you back to talk about the women's book, yes?
Wonderful. Thank you.
Absolutely. If you'd like to find out more information about the new book we talked about today, it's called The New Senior Man. Dr. Thelma Reese and Barbara Fleischer is really just check out the link on the bottom of today's show page and go directly to the website to find out more information. And it's really about women being able to support men, men support women. And if we all just took away the gender thing, we would say, you know what, I'm just reaching out to a kind friend to be able to help support them in living this world the best that they can today. Everyone is having a struggle. If we took off the labels of gender, of work, of identity, who's more important than the other? Wow, what a wonderful world that would be. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Till tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.